Dave in. Empty net for the Flyers. Extra attacker out. And Oshie with a chance to put it away. Will do just that.
Scramble face off. Comes back. Quick shot.
David Perron! It's a tie game!
With the empty net, Nick Foligno missed the net. The Cairn, the Perry out in front, and they score. A tip in for Foligno. And the Blackhawks are up 4-2 with 1:27 remaining.
Alexiev flips across ice. They score. Sonny Milano. And the Capitals are just pouring it on. And look out! It's out of the box. It's Mason McTavish on a breakaway. He scores! Mason McTavish rips the Penguins' hearts out late. A short-handed goal with 11.9 seconds to go.
Goodbye, Yellow Brick Road. Goodbye, Stanley Cup playoffs. Goodbye, Penguins. Goodbye, Penguins. Paul Zeiss back in the saddle across from me. It feels sad, man. It really does. I was watching a team that I passionately follow last night, the Golden State Warriors, and the similarities are striking. A team that's had great success, like a flagship team in their league with a generational superstar leading them, and just enough nights to entertain the fans and just enough still quality to delude their fans into believing they still have a chance. But the reality is, and we saw it on the same night, the Penguins aren't making the playoffs and the Washington Capitals are, and they are a crappy team.
Yeah, they're bad, but
and Golden State got hammered in a play-in game. It's over. It's over.
Yes.
That doesn't mean we can't be entertained. Doesn't mean we can't have some end of season fun. But as far as being Stanley Cup contenders in this era, they're done.
Yeah, this is it. I mean, here's the thing to me that I just don't want to hear because I'm tired of this. I don't want to hear, well, everybody's taking a deep breath now because the Penguins aren't in the playoffs. All the other teams in the playoffs, they were shaking in their shoes about the possibility of having to play the Penguins. But now they can all take a deep breath. I don't want to hear that. Because here's what I see. A team whose two goalies are not good enough. They're just not good enough. You know what I mean? Like, this thing, look what happened with Florida last year. This team with these goalies, they were not good enough to make a run in the playoffs. So, to me, I think probably the best case scenario. They got all the way to the end. There's only one game. It's tonight that we don't care about. So they made all 81. They made the first 81 games relevant and exciting the last 3 weeks. And they missed the playoffs. So now they can have a real honest conversation. Okay, this is 2 years in a row now. What do we actually really have to do? And I'm going to tell you, the first place you start, and I don't care what anybody says. I don't want to hear that. It's the same thing. It's the same discussion we always seem to have with the Steelers, right? Your coach, it's not a lifetime achievement award. You don't get to just say, I want a Super Bowl, so I stay forever. Especially in that league. And the bottom line is this. Since they won the Stanley Cup, they've won one playoff series. Then they lost to Washington in the second round. The next year, they lost to the Islanders. The next year, if you remember, they lost to like the 24th seed. It was the COVID year. They lost to Montreal. Remember that? They were like the 25th seed or whatever they were.
Yeah.
Then they lost in the first round to the Islanders. Then again to the Rangers. Then last year, they missed the playoffs. And this year they missed the playoffs.
6 long years, and really, I guess, so you're saying Sullivan should be fired, yes?
I think, that's where you start. To me.
Let's put that on the table at 412-928-9370, 928-9370. I'm inclined to agree, actually, but I'm also, I'm wavering on that one, Paul. Here's what I would do if I were them. I would reshuffle his staff for sure, and I would have a short list ready to go early next season. But that's not to say that I would rip them if they did. I wouldn't rip them if they did, because here's the thing. The problems that have emerged aren't getting fixed. They're getting worse, starting with the power play. We can talk about overtime. We can talk about goaltending. We can talk about depth, like your bottom six. Right. I don't care what you want to talk about. We can even talk about team defense and all the odd man breaks they give up and how irresponsible they are. The power play is there to cover up a lot of your weaknesses
Absolutely.
As a team. But, and when you're a high-end talented team like this, you have to cash in on the power play. They had the second worst power play in the league. They were bad or average last year on the power play, underachieving. They got significantly worse, and nothing's happened to the coaching staff.
That's the point.
What are we doing here?
My point is this. You know what, Joe? I could live with, okay? I could absolutely live with the idea that you bring Mike Sullivan back on a really short leash with some changes to his staff, and you say the two Stanley Cups that you won aren't meaningless, so we're going to give you a little bit more of the benefit of the doubt that we've given in the past. You know what I mean?
But, yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, compare his last 4 or 5 years to Bylsma's. Bylsma's was significantly better. Now you can make the argument, well, the stars were younger then, but still.
No, you're exactly right on that. It's Bylsma all over again with the extra cup, which is significant. He did get it done a second time, but you're right.
But what I'm saying, when they made the decision to fire Bylsma, if I'm not mistaken, the year before they were in like the conference finals, weren't they?
Against Boston, yeah, yes, they were.
Yeah, I mean, okay, they got swept, but they at least got to the conference finals.
Yeah.
My point is, if you look at his last few years with the Penguins, to me, in many ways, they were actually, let's see. So he was with the Penguins. Here we go. Yeah. In fact, let me just double check this. Yeah. Bylsma never lost in the first round.
Is that right?
Yeah. With the Penguins, lost in the conference semifinals, conference quarterfinals. I guess it's conference quarterfinals.
Well, your point is well taken either way.
No, I guess he did. I guess conference quarterfinals, well, that would be the first round.
Yeah.
Why not just call it the first round? What are we talking about here?
Either way, your point is well taken that it's been a Bylsma-like run and that it's not good enough. And that Kyle Dubas is here trying to build an analytics-based organization. You know, they're going to spend all kinds of money on all the, you know, the deep dives on everything. When sometimes in hockey, it's Lou Lamoriello saying, screw this. I want Patrick Waugh in here as an ass kicker for my team. And the Islanders then going on a late season run to clinch third place.
Yeah.
It's a guy like Jim Rutherford making a hockey decision. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it might be time for some of those tough hockey decisions, the obvious ones, just to be made. And again, I would not, I could not rip the Penguins for moving on from Sullivan. They certainly have to shake up the coaching staff. I like Todd Reirden a lot, and I think he's a pretty good coach, but this isn't working.
No.
You know, and maybe it's more on the players than the coaches, but at some point, you're accountable to what your job description is.
Exactly.
His job description is to make the power play better, and it's gotten significantly worse. What are we doing? And you know, I wouldn't have a problem if they moved on from Sullivan. There's plenty of justification. Teams move on from coaches all the time. He's been here a long time, one voice. He's had great success and years now of failure, including missing the playoffs twice in a row. For the first time since Eddie Olczyk was here, and he had no chance, basically, because the Penguins were at the end of a tanking session and had just gotten sit. I mean, this isn't good enough. You know, Maybe it is for some people, though, to still have that little late season run. And I admit it's fun. It was fun for a bit. 412-928-9370. And the other question for me, Paul, I mean, there are plenty of them. But one that I just wrote about this morning is that it's time to move on from Tristan Jarry. And I compared this to Kenny Pickett in that in the world of pro sports, if you're the guy, then you're playing in the biggest games of the year when you're healthy and nobody questions it.
Right.
Pickett clearly wasn't the guy.
Right.
We now know. Because all it took to nail him to the bench was one good game from your third stringer against the broken Bengals.
Yeah.
This guy, when you look at Nedeljkovic's numbers over this little four-game stretch he had, going in, including the Boston game, his save percentage in those four games was 85. He got pulled from one. And still, with the season on the line, Sully would not turn to his $27 million goalie for even one start. When the season was on the line, he went with the backup. He went with the other guy.
Right, but...
And he told the world in that process, and I'm no mind reader, Paul, but I'm beginning to think that Sully doesn't believe Jarry is the guy.
Right. Well,
so get him out. Right, get him out of here.
Well, again, you got to move him now. You got to move a contract. But I will tell you, one of the worst things that happened for Jarry,
yeah,
is that he got put into that game on Saturday night and really didn't play very well.
Yeah.
Had he not got put in that game on Saturday night, I fully believe that he would have been the guy on Monday night. But
that's a great question.
I actually think that he was so bad. He wasn't horrific, but he wasn't great.
Yeah, he allowed two goals on like 10 shots, yeah, so he wasn't good.
He wasn't good, and I really believe that. If he probably would have been the guy on Monday night had he not come in on Saturday. Like if he just hadn't played, it would have been better than him playing and,
right,
you know, basically – Sullivan saying, boy, this doesn't exactly inspire confidence in this guy.
Well, I got a question for you in City Limits. Go ahead, off the top of your head, give me Tristan Jarry's defining moment, his biggest weighty win as a Penguin. Right, exactly, exactly.
I don't have an answer.
He's going to turn 29 this month. He doesn't have any. Listen to this, Paul. He's never won a playoff series. He disintegrated against the Islanders 1 year, lost game 7 to the Rangers the next. Last April, he lost 3 of his final 5 decisions, including 5-2 to the pathetic Blackhawks that eliminated them.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. Yes.
This season, he lost 8 of his last 10. He's not the guy. And Mike Sullivan just told the world that he doesn't think that Jarry's the guy. So then you're right. The question becomes, what about the contract? What is it, a $5.3-something million cap
hit
for the next 4 years? Here's what I would say to that.
You know what's interesting is there was a point at some point early in this season where the discussion was sort of, well, Jarry is justifying his contract.
And he was at the time.
Right.
Yeah,
but
it was trending there.
To which I said, wait till the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to make any judgment about him or even this team until the playoffs, because he's shown at times in the regular season he can be a reasonably good goalie at times. So, okay, he's had a decent stretch here to start the season, really a pretty long stretch to start the season before mid-February or whatever. But we're going to judge him ultimately. Is he the guy in the playoffs? Well, he wasn't this year. Not only did he not justify his contract, now it's starting to look like one of these horrific contracts that was handed out that's going to be a pain in the Penguins' rear end for 4 more years.
And here's the other side of it, is that Jarry may not think Sullivan's the guy either, since every time he looks up, somebody's coming down on him on a 3-on-1 or a 2-on-1 or something like that, or a breakaway when they have a 2-man advantage at the end of a game against Ottawa. Remember that one?
Oh, yeah.
That legendary game.
Yes.
So it's a goalie-starved league. He's still in his 20s, that's true. And maybe another team says, listen, this guy has a really good career record. He's won a lot of games. He's tied for the league lead in shutouts this season with 6. Devils, Tom Fitzgerald, Maple Leafs, always looking for a goalie. Maybe they believe, hey, we're not the Penguins. We're a better team. And you know what? Maybe Jari on another team, on a better team, it does wonders for him. He's clearly a talented guy. I was going to say kid, but again, he's turned 29 here. So this idea that it's unmovable, the contract, I'm not so sure about that. Maybe you have to retain a little bit of it.
Yeah.
But I'm betting somebody, given their goalie situation, would look at Jari and say, with our team, this guy could thrive. He's a talented guy, wins games. He's won games in this league. 136 against 85 losses. So I'd be looking to move him, Paul, and I'd be trying to re-sign Nedeljkovic, who's playing the role of Mason Rudolph in this little two-man play. Then you have Joel Blomqvist, who is almost ready. You sign a stopgap maybe until he is. Hopefully you get Nedeljkovic back. This is done. Jari's not the guy. It's time to end this. As their goalie.
Is there, other than basically, was it Hextall or Dubas who signed him to? I think it was Dubas.
Dubas went out and visited him.
Other than Dubas and apparently Sullivan, is there anyone that thought he was going to be the guy?
That's a good question.
Because I never did.
Well, maybe because they felt compelled to sign him to that deal, seemingly in reaction to somebody else is going to go out and get him, so we better make him a nice offer here. I would think that I don't want to turn Jari into a complete bum. Like, I still think he's talented. You don't get to that record and have some of the numbers he's had in the league and become an all-star a couple times if you suck. I don't think he does. I just don't think that it's working here, and I think when it comes to the biggest games, he has tended to shrink, honestly. That's what I think. But that doesn't mean it takes one team, one goalie starved team out there.
I think it's different, though. Here's what I'm telling you. I think this is what's different, though. I don't believe that Tristan Jari's a bum. But there's a leap between bum and franchise goalie.
For sure.
And he's somewhere in between.
For sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's, to me, and I've always said this, he feels like a backup, a good backup goalie. That's what he feels like to me. That's what he always has. And especially when you consider his record of, you know, now the one thing we didn't have that we didn't have this year that usually you have is injuries.
Well, he's had some of those over the years,
right?
Too,
but this year he actually stayed healthy. That was one of part of his MO too, is that he gets injured too much, and that he's, you know, he's not available enough, and that he.
But we agree on this, though, that the Penguins are an extremely loose defensive team and one of the most mindless teams around when it comes to turnovers. They're not very good in front of their goalie, right?
Right.
So if I'm Tom Fitzgerald in Jersey, I may be saying to myself, all right, the Penguins, they're not even a playoff. They're like us this year. They stink. But the last 2 years before this, I'm looking at a guy that I knew when I was in Pittsburgh. This is Fitzgerald talking. He was 58-31 the 2 years previous. He had a .919 save percentage a couple years ago. He is absolutely talented. And with us, I think he can be that guy who plays 55 games, gets you a .910, .915 save percentage, and wins. I'm not saying it would happen, but all it takes is one team. And here's what I really believe is that the Penguins have to move on from this.
Yes. There's no question.
By hook or by crook here, you got to move on from Jari.
They got to move on from Jari. And again, here's the thing. And I hate using it because it's a cliche, but I don't care. The definition of insanity is doing the same things over and over again and expecting different results. And what's going on right now with the Penguins over the last 3 years, it feels like insanity. Okay, fine. You got rid of Hextall. Wonderful. Okay, you shouldn't have been hired in the first place, but you got rid of him. That's a big shakeup. That's a nice big move. Okay, now what's the next big shakeup, right? I mean, we can look all around every, you know, it's like it's like Cal Dubas now is looking, you're Mike Sullivan, right? He's looking over here. He's looking, even though right in front of him, is the next big move you have to make.
But he may want to make that move. It seems clear that Fenway Sports Group does not. So he's handcuffed.
And then the next one is, this goalie that we signed is not good enough.
Yeah.
The next one after that is to sit down with a couple of the old guys and say, listen.
But you're talking in terms of Dubas, like go back to the first one with Sully. It ain't his decision on Sully.
I guess maybe not. But my point is, whoever's decision it is,
yeah,
go to the old guys too and just say, we want to move on.
Mm-hmm. And that gets to?
What team would you want to finish your career on? And I'm not talking about Sidney Crosby, but I'm talking about, you know.
Gino and Letang.
Or both, or one, or the other, and figure out if there's some way you can, you know, you can find somebody that'd be willing to take Carlson off your hands.
And then I don't disagree with you on all that.
And all I'm saying is then you can start to really have honest conversations about what it is going to take to rebuild the team. But as long as you're kidding yourselves that you've got the band together, you know, the band that won in, what, 15, 16 or whatever it was, 16, 17?
Yeah.
It's been so long ago. Those 2 years in the middle. So, as long as you keep bringing the band back, you keep convincing yourself that you're one or two moves away from really getting back to being Stanley Cup contenders. And the worst thing that could have possibly happened here in these last 12 games is that they did make this push and win and get, because I guarantee you, well, you see, we're not that bad. We just had a couple little things. We're not that far away. I mean, if we just had a couple things go our way earlier in the season, we'd be in the playoffs. We don't need to make you. It's over. As you said, it's absolutely over.
And then it becomes from ownership's perspective and from fans. And please weigh in on this one at 412-928-9370. Future of Sully, future of Jari, future of Letang and Malkin. And you have to ask yourself, I love Gino. I've defended Gino so many times in this town when he's been shredded. And he had a pretty good late season run. It was fun to watch. But is he a player that puts you on the plus side of winning or the minus side of, like, is he a winning player or a losing player right now? You know what I mean? And then there's the question of, from an ownership perspective, we still get a decent amount of people in the building. They want these guys. They want the band together. Maybe it was worth it this year to be alive till late in the season, to have all those dark winter nights still be somewhat entertaining. It's a tough decision, because if you're the Penguins and you want to tear the whole thing down and you know you're going to lose for a bit, fans are going to disappear from that franchise real fast.
Right.
You'll just have to go on the belief you can get it back when you're good again.
But if you win, they'll be around if you win.
Yeah. Or even if you just win like this, they're still around and they're still entertained and a lot of them still liked this.
It's good, but I'm just going to tell you, it just is kind of a, I guess my question is, what's your goal?
That is the question.
What's your goal?
That is the question.
If it's just to try and be entertaining enough to get to the end of the season and have a few stars that people will buy tickets to, okay, by all means, have at it. Have at it. Keep doing it. You probably got another 2 or 3 years you can squeeze out of this.
Right. And I think they are going to have at it like that.
I mean, it's just so backwards in my mind.
928-9370.
And, you know, as an aside real quick, you made mention of Golden State. I mean, they're probably in a similar situation.
They're in the exact same situation, you know, man. It's so similar. It's eerie. They have a core three of old guys.
Right.
Steph is Sidney Crosby. Then you have Draymond and Klay Thompson. All three of them were signed to big deals.
Right.
Now Clay's contract is up, and everybody's like, do we get rid of him? What do we do? He's Evgeny Malkin. What do we do with the guy? He's been the second fiddle for a long time, and then there's Draymond. And so I will acknowledge this from an ownership standpoint. It's not an easy decision because fans are attached to these guys, and they're still winning just enough to keep people entertained for an entire winter.
Yeah.
And there's something to, from the financial side and all that, and the emotional side, there's something to be said for that. But both franchises are done.
But that's
with this core for winning championships.
But here's the thing. If Golden State is going to follow the Penguins model, they're going to sign Klay Thompson.
Again.
And they're going to keep Draymond Green around.
And their coach last night, Steve Kerr, said we need Klay around. Got to have him.
Right.
He went 0 for 10.
He was 0.
He went 3 for something in last year's season losing loss.
He scored as many points last night as you and I did.
That's exactly
right. But that's my point, though. My point is, the Penguins had a chance to get out from underneath it and opted instead to re-sign the old guys.
And I'm saying that I have a degree of understanding for that, even if I don't agree with it. I do have that it's a scary proposition to say we're gonna strip this thing down. Then again, you know, you might not have to completely strip it down.
Right.
You approach Evgeny Malkin and say, will you finish your career? It takes a lot, though, Paul. He may say Florida's the only place I would go to. What if Florida doesn't want him?
That's true. Know?
That's the problem. Let's go to a call there, Limits, as the phone lines light up like Malzy in a craft beer house.
We have Brian in Brookline.
Hey, Brian.
Hey, Joe. Hey, Paul. You guys are great together, by the way.
Thank you.
So welcome. So, Paul, you guys both hit it. Like, we're just like when Troy Polamalu was at the end of his career, Heinz Ward was in his career. We kept him around like a year too long. I would go back when Rod Woodson wasn't Rod Woodson no more. It's time for us as Pittsburgh to let go of yesteryear. These guys can't do it. Can they do it for maybe 20 games a season? Yeah, that's it. That's all Malkin and Letang can maybe do it for, maybe a couple more. But that's so spotty. And, yes, Sullivan is a systematic coach. The system is broke. We don't score power play goals. That's what we're supposed to do. His system is altered. We need a guy with a different system, a different voice, Joe. So I agree with everything you guys are saying today. That's my two cents.
Do you think, Paul, and we appreciate the call.
Thank you.
That Sully would welcome a change of scenery if you injected him with true serum? He's a very smart man. He has to know he can't win with this group. Wouldn't it be kind of like Jari? Wouldn't it be maybe best for him too to move on? Kind of like we were talking with Tomlin.
I'm fuzzy on this. Correct me if I'm wrong, but do they actually trade coaches in the NHL?
I don't think so.
I was going to say
it has happened, but last I looked, I think it's been Knicks that you can't do that.
Oh, I was going to say
somebody may know differently. That's the last I looked.
But I think Sullivan, he says all the right things, right?
Yeah.
He says all the right things all the time. But at the end of the day, it really is a situation where he's got to know that this group, as long as he's got the four that he's got to, you know, basically build the team around, they're going nowhere. Right?
I have to think part of him knows that and part of him would like to be somewhere else. But like Tomlin, he's a very, very prideful competitor and an accomplished guy. And he may feel like he's, you know, bailing. He may feel like he's bailing on Sid or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There may be part of him tugging at him.
I mean, there's something to be said, too, for him, though, about being able to coach Sidney Crosby. You know what I mean? Knowing full well, hey, I go somewhere else, I'm not going to have that guy. You know, I'm not going to have that guy. I mean, think about this. Here's a great question. If you took Sidney Crosby off this team this year, how many wins do they have? I mean, how many games did he just basically carry them and push them over the finish line?
It's a great question. And that's another offseason question, is you obviously sign him to a long-term deal, right? We'll get to that coming up here. What were you going to say?
I was going to say that's the thing with him is he might say, you know, I don't think I can win with this group, but I got Sidney Crosby.
Yes, they have. The Penguins, unfortunately, are secondhand news, aren't they? City Limits.
It's unfortunate.
Secondhand news.
Aren't they?
Well, again, I thought it was funny last night. I just happened to be on Twitter when the Flyers lost. And the explosion.
Yes.
About Tortorella pulling his goalie.
He claims he didn't know that the Capitals or that the Red Wings game was over.
Yeah.
And that it didn't matter what the Flyers did.
Because
they pulled their goalie late in regulation. Because
they needed a regulation win because they couldn't give a point to the Capitals.
Right. They thought they did, and then it became moot.
I don't
blame him.
Yeah,
do you?
I
believe him. I believe he's in the midst of that game, and no matter what.
Yes.
They thought they needed a regulation win.
Yes. But it just goes to show you how far people will go to create conspiracies. You know what I mean?
Like, are you watching the split screen?
You know, yeah. I mean, the bottom line is yes. The bottom line to me is when he made the decision to do that, they had to win.
Yes.
And not give the Capitals a point.
Yeah, and it had just happened in Detroit. Right. I don't think anybody's walking up to Torts with a sheet saying this is what just happened.
Right, exactly.
And even if they did, I don't know what he does. You know what I thought was going to happen? The best case, who wound up winning the Detroit game? I stopped watching.
Detroit, I think.
It didn't matter at that point. Yeah, did they win in overtime or a shootout?
No, I think they won in overtime.
They did.
Yeah.
Because it didn't matter anymore once the Capitals thing happened. But it was incredible watching the end of Detroit-Montreal on one side of the screen on NHL Network and the Capitals-Flyers on the other. I can't remember a time I've been more riveted to a television in my life.
Yeah, it was pure entertainment. It reminded me of watching the Chargers and the Raiders deep in overtime and if they would tie or not.
Yes.
That's what it reminded me of.
That's a great call.
And
right there.
Do you remember, and I'll tell you the other thing, could you imagine if the Capitals had lost and somehow that the Capitals lost before the shootout in the other game? The Penguins' hopes would be riding on a shootout for between Montreal and Detroit. That would have been incredible.
And by the way, Detroit scored the only thing we'd be talking about last night, if the Capitals only got a point,
right,
is the end of that Detroit game in regulation when there should not have been icing called. And I saw it right away, and I texted somebody. I said, those guys loafed after that puck. They could have easily had it. There's no way that should have been icing. Then they get a faceoff and score with seconds left. And then they start talking about it on NHL Network. Oh, look at this. Let's go back to the end of regulation. Well, how did you not see it at the time? Now, it wound up not mattering. I get it. And what are the Canadians doing? They lead 4-1 one night and lose. They lead 3-1 the next night and lose. And then the Capitals, Flyers. You know what I thought was going to happen, though, Paul? I thought that Montreal was going to win because there were 7 seconds left in the blanking game, and that the Flyers, in spite of themselves, were going to score a late goal with like 2 seconds left. What do you do then if you tie the game? You just play it out in overtime, right? You just say, who gives a crap? Let's try to win anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. You mean if they had gotten to overtime and it was meaningless?
Yeah, because they were still trying to score out of habit. What if one of those deflections goes in with 2 seconds left?
Yeah.
Can you imagine? Or you know, a little more time than that, because I think the Capitals... Did the Capitals score on an open... No, they never scored on the open net.
Yeah, they did.
So what if it was 2-2?
Well, they had that disallowed goal that was called back on an inadvertent whistle.
That was crap, too.
What? Here we go. Wait, yes. I'm pretty sure their goal was on the empty net, which is what the problem was.
No, they didn't. Did they score on the empty net?
Yes, yeah. Oshie scored game winner into an empty net.
But they never got the insurance goal. So the Flyers, right to the end, were trying to tie it.
But here's...
Even though they had to know... Well, they definitely knew that if they went to overtime, their season was done no matter what happened in Detroit. But what if one of those shots just goes in?
Here's what's hilarious, and this is what you got to love about sports in some ways. Going into the final five games of the year, the Capitals had lost 6 games in a row.
Yeah.
We all said, they're done.
And they should have been.
They're done. And then they win four of the last five to get to the playoffs.
It's just, it's so
like the Penguins at that point,
mediocre in the East, at the bottom.
The Penguins were playing so well for, you know, that stretch of eight to ten games. And then what happens at the end? They lose and, you know.
Hey, man, I was watching LeBron, Anthony Davis against Zion Williamson last night in an unbelievable basketball game. Did you ever write that column that the NHL should have a play-in?
Yeah.
You're right. They should have a play-in because all these teams stink. The Islanders are third place in their division. They won 38 of 81 games so far. The Capitals won 40 of 82. The Penguins have won 38 of 81 games.
Right.
So all of them deserve to be in a one-game situation. Yeah. And you know what it would be, Paul? It would be Islanders-Capitals. One game, winner advances, loser has to play the winner of Penguins-Red Wings. It would be unbelievable. You know, we could be looking at a Penguins, at Ovechkin and Crosby, one game to get in the actual playoffs.
And you'd have an opportunity then, it would almost feel like a game seven again.
Yes. It would be incredible. How do they not do this, City Limits? Can you write the league, please?
I just think it's gimmicky. I mean, do we really want to see more teams that are not very good fight for playoff chances? Like,
yes, we do.
Yes.
It was entertaining last night.
All of us, Paul and I, do. Don't you?
I'm just not up for it. It doesn't drive me to the TV.
Wait a second. Ovechkin and Crosby in a one-game playoff?
Ovechkin versus that wouldn't get you one.
Being a Penguins game, it would. But if it was, say, Seattle playing against Vegas in a one-game playoff, no, I would not watch that.
What if it was the Red Wings and the Capitals in a one-gamer?
No? Also not that entertained, though.
No? All right. To each his own. I don't understand.
I mean,
him,
to me, now the last night, the Golden State game didn't turn out to be a great, great game.
No, but it was compelling because it was the end of an era.
Right. But the Laker game was a lot
was
of fun.
Great.
That was a great game.
And now you'll have the Miami Heat tonight playing for their lives. It's against Embiid. I mean, come on. Limits. You're not going to watch? Are you an NBA guy?
I watched bits and pieces of the Warriors game and the last, 2 minutes of the Lakers game just because it was close.
You going to watch a little Embiid, Jimmy Butler tonight in a one-game, situation?
I'll probably watch the end of the Penguins' destruction tonight.
Did you watch the Reds-Pirates wild card game? Did that interest you in 2013?
Of course.
Well, that was a one-game, essentially a one-game play-in game. It's a wild card game. One game, you're in or out.
Yeah, I mean, I understand the perspective of where you're coming from that. I just think that continued addition of playoffs, it's like expanding the NCAA tournament. Adding more teams does not mean it's going to be better.
But you're really not. You're just adding the list of teams that can get a chance to get in. You're not expanding.
Right.
The field is still 8.
The field is still 8. That's the beauty of it. You're not changing the playoffs.
Have we changed your mind with this argument?
No, I still don't really care about it.
I like that.
I just don't.
I like a man who stands by his convictions.
You don't, but that's just it. You're not expanding the playoffs. It's almost like the whole thing with the NCAA tournament. I would be okay if they expanded it from the standpoint of they had a bunch of play-in games for seeds, but the real tournament was still the 64 teams.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yes. Well, let's weigh on this really quickly because we have Dan Zangrilli coming up at the top of the hour. And the general we have on the line, of course, is in 20 seconds or less, Paul, your thoughts on Jared Jones getting 59 pitches last night.
I think it's absurd. And I get it. I know it's the way we do baseball now. It's analytics. You know, I don't want to hear that crap. Because here's the thing. Do you notice this, Joe? They have all these pitching programs. And listen, I'm not even criticizing the Pirates here. Major League Baseball in general. They have all these pitching programs, all of these innings counts, all of these ways that you weigh, this inning is weighted a little bit more than this inning, and so there's some formula. All of these different, we've got to shut them down for 8 days or 10 days. They have so many different things in place nowadays to basically not let guys pitch. It's really working out well in terms of preventing injuries, isn't it? Being as the number one story right now in Major League Baseball is all of these, the agents and all of these people basically saying, too many pitchers are getting hurt.
Yeah. Well,
I'm wondering if at some point they might say one of the reasons pitchers are getting hurt is because we treat them like fragile, we treat them like fragile, vases where we don't let them pitch. We don't let them build up their arm strength. We don't let them build through their tolerance of. I mean, it's someone has to explain to me. And believe me, I've asked trainers, I've asked, coaches, I've asked managers, I've asked pitchers.
Aren't you glad I said in 40 seconds yes. or less? Yeah, clearly.
I'm just saying, but let me just say this. How is it that 25 or 30 years ago, guys used to go 8-9 innings, got complete games, the whole, and we have 80 times better training methods, technology,
some people tell you the difference today is that every starter throws like a closer. That's all about maximum velocity, maximum spin rate. That the analytics, to me, have actually helped to cause this instead of help this. And I'm not even sure, by the way, that this alleged like rash of pitcher injuries is even a fact. When I look at some of the numbers out there of Tommy John surgeries 15 years ago compared to now, I'll give you those numbers coming up. I didn't like it. I understand the urge to protect young pitchers. I'm just not sure holding a guy to 59 pitches instead of 71 on a given day is really getting it done. Right?
Yeah.
Is really getting it done. That's A. B, if 59 pitches is acceptable to you, then get Skeens up here right now. Then just have him throw 55, 65 pitches.
Right.
And by the way, you're hardly ever going to get through five innings on that many. So if you have a bullpen with some length and some talent, you want three or four innings from your starter, we're heading in that direction anyway, then get Skeens up here. I don't know that just because you hold a guy to 59 pitches in a game where you can, where you're winning 1-0, like at what point does the urge to protect these guys like Vegas, you said, supersede the idea of winning baseball games?
Right.
That's that. And then another addendum to that is the Pirates aren't going to keep any of these guys past their first contract either. And I hate to be callous and cruel, but I say use them up while you can. I hate to say that, but that would be my philosophy if I were the Pirates, because we ain't keeping Gerrit Cole past his first contract. In fact, we're trading him with 2 years left on it. So let's get everything we can while we can.
They want to have it both ways. They want to protect these guys. You know what I mean?
We have to go.
Okay. We'll do it. But it's similar to the whole thing with the running back situation with the Steelers. Draft the running back in the first round, run his legs off, and move on.
Limits? We have to go.
Yes, we do. We have to get to the general.
Dan Zangrilli at sort of the top of the hour, talking about this.
It is the top of the hour.
The 50-minute mark on The Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge, Route 19, Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. Dan Zangrilli, I'm sure, has strong opinions, and I'm betting they're in favor of what the Pirates did, and I think a case can be made for it. I think you're going to hear him make that case very shortly, but first, the general, General Patton, Jeff Patton from the Baseball Card Castle in Cranberry with Starkey's Card of the Week. No guesses this week, General. Let's get right to it.
You would have guessed it anyway, gentlemen. Thanks for having me. We got to honor Kutch this week. 300 home runs. We got a great Andrew McCutchen card. Diamond Kings, piece of game-used bat, piece of game-used jersey. They only made 49 of these cards.
Beautiful.
And it's a great piece of Pirate memorabilia.
That's the greatest thing I've ever heard. Kutch's 300th win, or 300th homer. I asked you the other day, what did I ask you? Oh, about the baseball that guy caught in the stands. What would that be worth if somebody walked into the Baseball Card Castle and said, General, I've heard you on 93.7 The Fan, and I absolutely love you, and I have an artifact here. It's Kutch's 300th home run ball. What do you think I can get for it? What would be your answer?
$5,000. It's a piece of Pittsburgh Pirate baseball history. It isn't necessarily a piece of baseball history. A lot of that has to do with it. When you talk about the bidding process, when there's Yankee bidders involved or Dodger bidders involved, it escalates. It's a great thing for Western Pennsylvania. It's an okay thing for baseball history. If it was 500 home runs, it would be a whole different echelon. Kutch is awesome. There's tons of people in Western PA who would love to put that thing on their mantle. 5,000 to 10,000.
Ooh, okay. Thank you, General. You're a wonderful man.
Have a good week.
All right.